mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the mayor says the city is ready. What about the rest of Hancock County? Sheriff Michael Heldman discusses the final preparations for managing the crowds and other issues of next week's solar eclipse. Also this morning, for a variety of reasons, many outside their own control, women are more likely to become trapped in generational poverty. One woman who has lived it herself has now created an innovative program to help others overcome that challenge like she did. We'll get details. And new executive director Sarah Foltz talks about April events and happenings at the Hancock Historical Museum. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. Not sure how this did not make bigger headlines yesterday, but the last surviving crew member from the battleship USS Arizona, U.S. Navy veteran Lewis Cunter, has died at the age of 102. Cunter was standing on the quarterdeck of the Arizona when Japanese bombers swarmed the skies over the Hawaiian island of Oahu and attacked the U.S. Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. Within minutes, the Arizona itself had exploded in flames, smoke, and pandemonium. It says here, Cunter was, at the time, a quartermaster third class and was among the fortunate few who were able to get off the battleship alive as it crumpled and sank, taking 1,177 of its 1,400-member crew with it. Mr. Cunter had enlisted in the Navy in 1939, went on to serve throughout World War II in the Pacific Theater and Europe, and later served in the Korean War, retiring from the military as a lieutenant commander in 1967. And he passed away yesterday at his home in Grass Valley, California, the last surviving crew member from the battleship USS Arizona. Has died at the age of 102. I just thought it was important that you know and that America remembers. I was really shocked that that was not a bigger headline yesterday than it actually was, but happened to pop up on my Google feed. So did you fall for anything yesterday? It was April Fool's Day yesterday. And as always, there were a lot of jokes and fast ones being pulled on people. Social media has really allowed companies and brands to have a lot of fun with customers on April Fool Day, and yesterday was no exception. Rosetta Stone, the language learning company, had a really good one. This one, I think, was my favorite yesterday. They posted that they were launching Rosetta Stoned. It is a stoner to sober translator. Which actually, I'm thinking, you know, the more states legalize recreational marijuana, there may actually be a need for this. Rosetta Stoned, stoner to sober translator. The story that we mentioned the other day turned out to be an April Fool's joke. 7-Eleven's threat of the Big Bite sparkling water, combining the delicious and mouthwatering experience of 7-Eleven's iconic Big Bite hot dog into one refreshing beverage. Ketchup and mustard included. It turned out that that indeed was an April Fool's joke. No, that was good. JetBlue, speaking of hot dogs, JetBlue announced that their flight attendants would be pushing Nathan's hot dog carts down their aisles of their plane. That turned out to not to be true. Although, again, there is one that I could get behind that. Nathan's, that's good stuff. And I thought this one was kind of cute. Tinder, the dating app, leveraged the popularity of the new Ghostbusters film with the trend of ghosting. You know, that's the thing. You know, in slang parlance or online dating, when someone ghosts you, they say they'll meet you for a date, and then they just disappear. You have a first date, and then they just disappear. They stop replying to your text and everything. So Tinder said that they were going to hire the Ghostbusters to track down those who ghost their members. And that turned out to be a joke. But again, I was rather clever. And this one was kind of cute. Dunkin', which, of course, a few years ago rebranded from their original name Dunkin' Donuts, and they dropped the donuts part. Now they're just Dunkin'. They announced that they would be changing their name again, this time going to just Donuts. So instead of Dunkin' Donuts, they tried just Dunkin', so now they're going to try just Donuts. That turned out to be an April Fool's joke, and that I thought was pretty clever as well. Some of my favorites from yesterday, the story that they are building a new casino at Put-in Bay. I almost fell for that one. Yeah, popped up on my social media feed, the announcement of a new casino being built in Put-in Bay, along with the familiar Lake Erie Islands tunnel story. That one has circulated before, but the casino at Put-in Bay I thought was rather clever, and I almost fell for that one. There was the announcement of a new thrill ride at Cedar Point to replace the Corkscrew, which apparently is not happening. Some people were hoping it would. I think the Corkscrew is, kind of past its prime, but that turned out to be just a red herring. And Garner Trucking and Sherry Garner posted this yesterday on social media that they had purchased a new plane to expand into air cargo. The Garner Trucking 747. And a lot of people fell for that one based on the responses when Sherry posted that. She got a lot of people say, "Oh, well, congratulations, expanding, growing, you'll do great," and all of that. And she said, "No, I'm just kidding. I think we'll stay to ground transportation. That's what we're best at." But I thought that was kind of clever, and she actually fooled a few people with that one. So if you fell for something yesterday, don't feel bad. You are not alone. Some of the other interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started. This is not an April Fool's joke. Officials in the state capital of New York, Albany, are trying to figure out the cause of a foul odor blanketing a certain part of the city. It is described as a ghastly combination of urine and flatulence, according to news reports. And the New York Department of Environmental Conservation has been enlisted to figure out what's causing it, although one lawmaker points out that the affected neighborhood is downwind from the state capitol. So, from the Capitol building. So, it is no joke, but I thought that was a clever comeback. Let's see, what else is going on in the in the world? Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories worth knowing here this morning. Kind of interesting, about 500,000 people left Florida in 2022. Talking about population shift in this country. 500,000 people left Florida in 2022. It turns out that some recent transplants to the Sunshine State were disillusioned with what they found when they got there. Florida is certainly known as a popular destination for those in the Northeast and Midwest to retire to, but some have actually been shocked by the high cost of living and even the weather that they thought they were going to love. One New York transplant said, even in New York, I had a good salary, but when we moved to Florida, we were barely making ends meet. It had zero quality of life. That was a doctor from New York that said that the cost of living was just too high there. One Connecticut woman who moved to Florida said she was disappointed because it wasn't the weather utopia that I thought it would be. Jody Cummins, her name, she said, "I didn't expect it to be literally 100 degrees at night with 100% humidity." I mean, it's great in the wintertime, but you get into the months of May, June, July, August, it is unbearable in Florida with the heat and the humidity. She said it was incredibly difficult to make friends as well. So I've always found Floridians to be very welcoming, very nice folks, but I suppose there are some places where there are so many, and it's such an influx of people moving in that maybe less welcoming than maybe they used to be. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting. About 500,000 people, transplants into the state of Florida, have now left because it wasn't the utopia that they thought that it might be for retirees. Kind of interesting. And this is a story, couple of items here, actually, that demonstrate just how pervasive technology has become in our society. And I don't know, I don't want to say some of the unintended consequences, but interesting side effects of that. A new research study finds that young kids cannot delineate between Alexa and a real human being, in the sense that children between the ages of 6 and 11 believe that the devices actually can think for themselves. Now, these are young kids, believe that the devices actually can think for themselves. And 70% said that it is wrong to be rude to a device like Siri or Alexa, to an artificial intelligence, digital personal assistant. It's rude. It's wrong to be rude. That's what the kids said. AI, according to the researcher, and this was conducted by the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, the lead researcher, Judy Robertson, says AI is often designed to appear more human and intelligent than it really is, and it is very confusing for our children. So just something that you might want to think about if you have one of those devices in your home. Have that conversation with your kids. It's not actually a real person in a machine. It's not a thinking device, at least not in the same way that humans think. So basically, you can tell your kids it's okay to be rude to Alexa. I actually have fun being rude to Alexa from time to time. I enjoy it. It's one of the things when I can't be rude to real people, I can be rude to my digital assistant and take out my frustrations on her. And in this day and age, Generation Z, now these are people born between 1997 and 2012. So think about this, with tax deadline day right around the corner, these younger adults, certainly not uncommon for some of them to maybe be filing a tax return for the first time, and they are stressed out. According to a recent survey from Cash App, one in four Gen Zers say that they need a therapist to deal with tax filing stress. And generally, these are first-time filers, probably have fairly simple returns, and they're already stressed out. Tax preparers say it is not uncommon for Gen Z clients to be filing a tax return for the first time, and often they are unaware of the basics, like where to get a 1099 or even what a 1099 is. And it is so stressful that some of them say that they need therapy, which may say something about the complexity of taxes, may also say something about the thin-skinned nature of some of the young adults today, maybe. Many of them have been very sheltered to this point. If the simplest of tax returns means you have to go to therapy. I mean, I know it's stressful, but therapy. Wow. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Two people are dead and two seriously injured in a crash in Canal Winchester, southeast of Columbus. Yolanda Harris from WBNS-TV has the story.
This happened at the intersection of Gender Road and West Waterloo Street. The Columbus Division of Fire tells us two people were pronounced dead at the scene and two others were taken to hospitals in serious condition. The State Highway Patrol is investigating.
Most of Ohio faces the threat of severe weather. Storms with threats of tornadoes, hail, high winds, and flash floods are predicted. The afternoon and evening hours pose the greatest chance for strong winds and possible tornadoes. Temperatures are also expected to drop significantly overnight, with some areas seeing a chance for a wintry mix on Wednesday. In central Ohio, former Southwestern City Schools teacher Benjamin Rutan was sentenced yesterday to 6 years behind bars for having a sexual relationship with a student. Yolanda Harris with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus reports.
Madison Sparks, it was a very emotional
additional day in court. Madison says this sentence was not enough. This 6-year sentence was the recommended time agreed upon between the prosecutor and Rutan's attorney. The prosecutor noted that this sentence would seem too light. Before the judge handed Rutan his sentence, we did hear from Sparks saying he singled her out in the 7th grade when she was just 12 years old. She also said 12 years in prison would be more appropriate, counting for every year since this began.
For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Before we get to our cover story this morning, I saw this on the Newswire. It's probably not a huge surprise. Experts with the American Astronomical Society are warning that the market has been flooded with fake eclipse glasses that do not meet the standard for adequate eye protection. And they say that if you are using one of these cheap knockoffs, you could be risking severe eye damage, even blindness. They have a list of reputable makers of eclipse eye protection at their website, aas.org. Worth checking out ahead of next week's eclipse. The mayor says the city is ready. What about the rest of Hancock County? Sheriff Michael Heldman is with us this morning. And I guess the message, kind of like the mayor, is as ready as we're going to be?
I would say that's a correct statement. We have everything in place. We have people we have talked and we have met. We started meeting 2 years ago with the EMA director and talking about this eclipse on April the 8th of 24, and it's a few days away.
I'm sure when you first started meeting, it's like, oh, this is a long way off. We've got plenty of time, and now here we are just days away.
You know, and some of us saying eclipse, I mean, okay, but we never dreamed that there was that many people would follow and come from all over to one area.
Yeah.
But what we have done in Hancock County is the county fire departments, our volunteers, are coming together, and they're going to man their stations all day on Monday, and which is a tremendous help because you won't have the first responders going to the fire stations to pick up the trucks and going out.
Yeah.
They'll be there to go if there is something going on. As far as the EMS side of it, Hanco is going to be in Delaware Township in Mount Blanchard area. They're going to be manning one of their rescue units there. And Arlington, Appleseed EMS, they're going to be manning their station as well with one of their trucks setting in Genera. So the southern part of the county is going to be well covered as far as their first responders. We are going to be having our satellite office set up in Arlington at their fire station, and we're going to have our command vehicle there, our communications vehicle. We're going to have the staff working out of that area because that brings us closer to the line of the solar eclipse, which is just south of the county line, south of State Route 30. So we are pretty well set up in that way. The rest of the county is going to be covered with deputies. Fortunately, with the courts being closed, schools being closed, that brings us extra staff that we'll be able to man and do things and respond as necessary.
Because certainly, you know, we say, the city, we were talking about city preparations. There are going to be a lot of people, not just in the city, but throughout the county.
Correct.
And similar to the city, I know one of the things that the mayor talked about yesterday is within the city, traffic is the big concern.
Yes.
And that's going to be the same in the county as well, I'm assuming. Are there going to be any changes to traffic patterns or anything? The city is not doing that. Are there any plans for restricted access or changes to traffic patterns within the county?
We are not recommending any traffic pattern changes.
Okay.
Our main concern, working with the Highway Patrol, keeping interstate traffic flowing. State Route 30, east and west through the southern part of the county. Keep it flowing because once you stop that traffic and people sit and watch for 10 minutes or whatever it's going to be, traffic's going to get backed up.
Right.
And, you know, we've heard terrible rumors and stories of people a few years ago that was down in the Kentucky-Tennessee area.
Mm-hmm.
And the one gentleman said it took him 8 hours to go 1 mile.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid, we don't want that to happen.
Right.
So we want to keep traffic moving. We know that there's some businesses and industry that's going to be open on that day in Hancock County. So we got to make sure those people can get to work and vice versa, if they're getting off work, be able to get home.
Get home, right. And I would imagine that same thing. You mentioned US 30, you mentioned I-75. Really, any of the big thoroughfares are going to be receiving special attention. US 68
would be another one of those. 68 is going to be a big one as well.
Yeah. So keeping those clear is going to be a high priority. And it's interesting you bring up, not just for the sake of emergency vehicles, because you're not necessarily expecting an emergency, but you never know when something like that happens. And
so people, you know, what we're recommending is if you don't have to go out, don't go out that day or during those hours especially.
Mm-hmm.
What we've also been kind of warning and talking about is with all these influx of possible people coming into Findlay and Hancock County, our resources are going to be drained, the gas stations, the convenience stores, the grocery stores, mm-hmm. what have you. So people should prepare, kind of like they do for a snowstorm, go out and get a little bit of extra food and a couple of days' worth of food and, you know, make sure the gas is in the car before it runs out the gas station, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we do have two locations of campgrounds that have been set up temporary at Van Loo and then also up on the hill on 568 at the Walder property. There's about 80 different campsites that are going to be available.
I was going to mention, you know, we talked again yesterday about viewing sites, official viewing sites within the city of Findlay. Are there designated sites elsewhere in the county that are receiving special attention?
No, we haven't designated any sites. I know a lot of people are having friends and family over to their house, for example. I've heard different people talking about that.
Yeah.
We haven't designated anything. That's part of the reason, you know, people might just pull off the side of the road. And that's,
And we know that there are some villages, the village of Forest, for example, is kind of been unofficially designated as a prime spot. So it's probably going to attract a lot of a lot of folks. To what extent, and you were kind of touching on this earlier with respect to the volunteer fire departments and so on that are going to be fully staffed, to what extent are those village agencies cooperating and, you know, working hand-in-hand with all of those agencies to make this go as smoothly as possible?
You know, the cooperation with all the volunteers and EMS and fire has been tremendous. They've been attending the meetings regularly. Bluffton has been involved in our meetings as well. And so we've tried to keep our communication flowing and learning from everyone. And it's been it's been a real interesting task. And there's some aspects of it, looking forward to it, working with the local media, the radio station here, and Dave Glass and the things that they've offered to come forward. And they're going to be at the Emergency Operations Center. I will be there, and different ones from the city and the county are going to be in that facility. And we'll be broadcasting live as to keeping the people updated as to where they shouldn't go to and, you know,
areas to avoid.
Areas to avoid, correct.
Right. I guess the one thing, and thank goodness for small miracles, is that the weather appears that it's going to cooperate. We could have ended up with a day like today on Monday where we have storms in the forecast and, you know, who knows what else. Thankfully, it looks like Mother Nature is going to cooperate in that way. So
that's what I'm looking ahead to the weather. It's correct. We don't need this. I do know that if some of these areas that people were planning, you know, just on their own home to have people come in, the ground's going to be a little bit soft. It's kind of what I was wondering. You know, we talked about using the fairgrounds as far as parking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could make a definite change if this weather continues up until Monday.
Yeah, that's a good point too. So, again, basically the message is to kind of reassure folks all of the precautions and all of the plans that you can make. Have been made. I mean, at this point now, it's just managing the unknowns.
That's correct. Managing the unknowns. And as I mentioned before, if you don't have to go anywhere, stay at your own residence. Your backyard or your front yard may be the best place to view it.
Yeah. Again, Sheriff Michael Heltman with us this morning talking about the final preparations for the total solar eclipse, now less than 1 week away. Again, it's one of those things, like we were mentioning with the mayor yesterday, a tremendous experience. We are blessed to be in the path of the totality, but what I think we'll all be glad when it's over in some respects.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mayor, Sheriff Heldman, thanks very much for dropping
you.
By. We appreciate it.
Take care.
As we know, historically, women have long been at an economic disadvantage to men. There are many reasons for this, but the bottom line is that gender inequality is one of the oldest and most pervasive forms of inequality, not only here, but around the world. But in the U.S., 56% of the 38 million people who live in poverty are women. And joining us this morning is Tammy Thompson. She is national speaker and creator of The Psychology of Poverty. It's a program to change the lives of women living in poverty. And Tammy, you know the struggle because you lived it yourself.
That's right. And thank you so much for having me, Chris. And I thank you for highlighting this very important issue. Poverty in America is running rampant. And as you stated, women seem to be the most impacted by this societal ill. And yes, I was born into generational poverty, had a lot of trauma associated with that, and ended up being an adult, raising my own children in poverty. And at some point it was, for me, I have to figure out how to stop this cycle. But also I really wanted to understand how my experiences in poverty ended up being so traumatic. So much so that it shaped my entire understanding of who I was as a human being and how I was to function in society. And in order to move forward, I had to really understand that. So I spent almost 20 years studying my own experiences and shaping this curriculum that I've now used at a nonprofit that I founded to help women become more economically secure. And the poverty mindset is a huge factor in that. And I think it's one that goes overlooked quite a bit. So
yeah.
I'm trying to raise awareness around that.
It's interesting, the point that you raise about generational poverty. We think of this as being the result of bad decisions, but it is much deeper and more broad than that. And you have, over the course of, you know, two decades, as you were saying, studying this, become an expert. So how does your training then help women recognize and heal from that trauma of long-term exposure to poverty?
Yeah, I think you hit on it, Chris. You hit on it. That society has this idea about people in poverty. We've made a lot of assumptions. There's a lot of implicit bias around poverty, that people believe that poverty is rooted in bad decisions or people who aren't working hard enough or they're lazy and uneducated. And that's just not the truth. There are a lot of systems and policies that perpetuate poverty in this country. And being exposed to poverty generation after generation has a lasting impact on how people view themselves and what they're capable of. And so people just settle into just surviving. And unfortunately, being in survival mode and having a survival mindset prevents people from planning. Planning is what is required to get folks to economic stability. And so designing and developing curriculum that helps women and anybody in particular, but because I'm a woman and because
right.
this has been my experience, that is what I am focusing on. But we have to get folks to recognize the trauma. If you can't heal from what you can't see. And so helping people acknowledge it and understand that guilt and shame and all the things that come with being exposed to poverty, we have to get that out of the way. It's clogging up our energy. It's clogging up our ability to see ourselves differently. And once we help people understand how generational poverty works, how the poverty cycle works, and recognize that this is not a personal indictment. It is not, in a lot of cases, things that we can control. You can't control what family you were born into.
Mm-hmm.
So helping people acknowledge that and then helping them see, you are all born with natural talents and skills. We all are. And we have to be able to recognize the positive. Yeah, even though we've had horrible experiences,
mm-hmm.
we have the ability to take what was given to us organically and build a life on that.
So in the psychology of poverty, you talk about you identifying strengths and using that as the foundation for creating a plan that will lead to developing a stable financial foundation, again, primarily for women. How?
So one of the ways that we do that is we have developed some really strong entrepreneurship programming. Entrepreneurship programming and first-time homeownership programming to help folks build a foundation for economic stability. And really, if we're honest with ourselves, the only real way to move people out of poverty sustainably is through ownership. They have to have ownership of their lives, but also ownership of assets, assets that can be passed from generation to generation. That is how wealth is built in this country. So helping people develop the skills and understanding for what it takes to be a homeowner. And homeownership is just an investment. It's an investment that is, you have to be taught how to care for it, how to preserve it so that it's transferred over time. And then entrepreneurship. What natural skills and talents that you have that can be monetized? Can you monetize your love of children and how good you are with children? Well, maybe you can be a child care provider. Maybe you can open your own child care facility.
Yeah.
Are you the best cook that anybody in your family's ever met? Do you make the best pound cakes, right?
Yeah.
You can monetize these things and earn enough money.
And certainly these days, that is easier than ever. Just to kind of underscore something that you mentioned, I want to go back and reemphasize this. You talk about providing underlying skills, because it's one thing to put someone in a home or to help someone start a business, but without the underlying knowledge to keep that home and make that business successful, you'd be putting the cart in front of the horse.
Absolutely. So these programs, and we have these programs all across the country. We're in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is known for revitalizing itself, right? From being an industrial city to now where we've redeveloped ourselves. It's the same thing with people, right? Pittsburgh has these natural resources that have been birthed into a revitalization. We could do the same thing for people, right? Let's help people. Let's stabilize folks. Get them to a place where they can see there is a future for me if I have the right resources around me, the education, the peer support, the mental health support, which are very extremely important for helping folks get beyond trauma and seeing themselves as successful. People have to be able to visualize themselves in these financial principles. And I think we do a really good job of helping people acknowledge where they are today, but also reminding them that where you started is not where you have to finish.
Yeah. I think that's so important to what you mentioned. There are a number of other services and programs beyond just home ownership or business ownership, entrepreneurship that go hand in hand with this, including addressing those psychological barriers of, you know, this isn't possible for me, or I'm not good enough for whatever reason.
That's right.
It might be that people believe that. Again, Tammy Thompson is a national speaker, expert on poverty, specifically generational poverty. The creator of The Psychology of Poverty. Where do folks get more information about this program?
Folks can visit us at our website at www.catapultpittsburgh.org. And we are also in the process of expanding our programs and services across the country. So if you are interested in learning how we can bring our services and programs to your area, please reach out. We'd be happy to hear from you.
Tammy, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it this morning.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you for highlighting this super important issue.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Leading off the broken news this morning with a little Easter nonsense. A Florida woman was caught on camera appearing to take Easter eggs off of someone's porch. In Pasco County, this happened on Easter Sunday about 6 a.m. The alleged theft, police say they are investigating numerous reports. of stolen items in the area. How low do you have to be to steal someone's Easter eggs? To steal someone's Easter eggs, for crying out loud. It is unclear the motive the thief has for making off with the holiday treats. That is just beyond low. How do you steal Easter eggs? Come on. Come on. Anyway. Elsewhere in the broken news, this is unusual. Thankfully, it doesn't have a really tragic ending. A Chinese woman has been accused of trying to poison a pregnant coworker to prevent her from taking maternity leave. The victim noticed her water tasted strange, even when she drank out of the bottle. You know, it wasn't, you know, just from the tap. She was drinking, you know, a bottle of water and still tasted weird. She then decided to put a hidden camera up to record her work area, her cubicle, if you will, and she found that someone appeared to be pouring a powder into the water. Apparently, it was a coworker that didn't want to take on extra work if the pregnant woman went on maternity leave. She thought she had a solution. Wow, that's pretty dramatic. Police are now investigating the situation. It is unclear what the powdery substance in the video actually was. But apparently she's okay. Baby's okay. Everything's going to be fine, but wow. Man, oh man. Elsewhere in the broken... I have a feeling that that woman doesn't have to worry about taking on extra work anytime soon. I have a feeling that she's been relieved of her duties. She doesn't have to worry about taking on extra work, certainly. United Airlines flight headed for... You know, United has had a number of high-profile incidents on their planes, and they've been reeling from some of these accidents and incidents. And now here's another one. United Airlines flight headed from Frankfurt, Germany to San Francisco had to turn back a couple of hours into its journey because of a backed-up toilet on the plane. backed-up loo caused a foul smell to seep into the cabin. And, of course, it was a Boeing plane, so Boeing's going to take a hit from this, too. You know that, that Boeing is going to... Well, they've got things falling off of the plane, and now they've got backed-up toilets. What's going on? Boeing 777. The crew reportedly called technicians from the plane to try and troubleshoot the problem in the air, but they were unable to find a solution that could allow them to continue the flight. And the company tells the outlet that all the passengers were put up in hotels overnight and then flown out to San Francisco the following day. Oh, that's embarrassing. Although... as airline accidents go, that's relatively minor. I mean, I think I could deal with that. Still, not what anyone needed. Elsewhere in the broken news, now this is, speaking of travel, this is pretty extreme. Six Americans and two Australians ended up stranded on an African island after failing to return to their cruise ship on time. The tourists, there's more to this story, though. The tourists were left on the island of Sao Tome after the captain of the Norwegian cruise ship refused to let them back on board. You see, even though the ship was still anchored when they arrived, they missed the all-aboard time. The passengers had left the ship to go on a private tour, missed the all-aboard time to return, and even though the ship was still anchored when they arrived, the captain allegedly refused to let them on and left without them. I mean, I know when my kids were young, I threatened to do that. You know, I threatened, I'm going to pull over the car and leave you at the side of the road. But I never actually did it. This captain actually did this. In an African island. Wow. Have a feeling we have not heard the last of that story. Methinks there will be a lawsuit involved. before that whole story is said and done. And finally, in the broken news, and again, speaking of airplanes and air travel, apparently it is quite literally a crime what some reporters are doing on Air Force One. Literally, it is a crime what some reporters are doing on Air Force One. It seems there is a growing problem with reporters and other guests stealing souvenirs from the president's private plane. Apparently, they're pilfering items from Air Force One to show off to friends and colleagues. The rampant thievery has gotten so bad, in fact, that the White House Correspondents Association and President Kelly O'Donnell fired off a stern warning to the reporters pool that taking items off the plane reflects poorly on the rest of the press. This is a report in Politico. And apparently this is not necessarily new. For years, scores of journalists and others have quietly stuffed everything from engraved whiskey tumblers to wine glasses to pretty much anything with the Air Force One insignia on it, stuffed these items into their bags before stepping off the plane. One current White House reporter told a news reporter who was covering this story. One current White House pool reporter said, on my first flight, the person next to me said, you should take that glass. And they were shocked by this, but the other reporter said, hey, everyone does it. Many people have gone to jail with the defense. Everyone does it. You know, that doesn't really work very well. I got to admit, though, if I was ever on Air Force One, I would be tempted. Wouldn't you be tempted? You would be tempted, wouldn't you? You'd be tempted. There you go. That maybe what they need to do is in the next Air Force, they're building the next Air Force One. Maybe they need to have a gift shop that people visit before they get off the plane. You have to go through the gift shop, like in a lot of museums and tourist traps. You got to go through the gift shop to get off the plane. Hey, that would be the solution. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Did you know more than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for their news, traffic, weather, sports, and a community connection? AM radio is the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping Americans safe in dangerous times. This is News Director Matt Demchek. AM 1330 WFIN is here to serve you, and we take seriously our commitment to our listeners. We would love to hear what you value most about AM radio. Visit WeAreBroadcasters.com and tell us how you depend on AM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You remember back during the height of the pandemic, there was all this concern about how very little human interaction we were getting. It was one of the drawbacks, one of the many drawbacks, but particularly when it came to mental health and so on, is that we are a social people. We need social face-to-face interaction. We just weren't getting it. Well, now we're how many years out from the pandemic? Life has kind of returned to normal for most of us. And yet a new poll of 2,000 adults finds that 40% of adults have gone 3 days or more without any kind of face-to-face interaction with another human being. Have you ever felt all alone in a crowd? 28% of those in the poll have experienced loneliness, even at a party. Women are slightly more likely to experience this than are men. 42% say their sleep suffers when they feel lonely. 29% of respondents say they feel less attractive. Human beings, according to psychologist Anjula Mutanda, human beings are, by our very nature, social beings. And psychological research confirms and tells us that we need to belong, to relate to each other, and to feel connected to other people. I just thought this was a really interesting survey that even here after the pandemic, when we were acutely aware of the need for face-to-face human interaction, we are still not getting what we need. 40% of us. Anyway, that's a pretty significant number. So just something to think about if you find yourself in a group of people with the opportunity to go up and engage someone in a crowd or at work or at a party or whatever it might happen to be, take the opportunity to do that, because you never know. That person that you are interacting with may be one of those 40% that have gone 3 days or more without a face-to-face interaction and experiencing some of those negative side effects of that. Something we all need to be reminded of, I think, from time to time. Sarah Foltz is with us. She is the new executive director, the Hancock Historical Museum, to talk about April events, happenings at the museum. First of all, Sarah, thanks very much for joining us. Starting to settle in now. I mean, you've been on the job for a few weeks.
That is
so I'm sure you've got it down.
Yes, yeah. Great way to put it. Yes, I'm so happy to be here, though. The team has been absolutely wonderful. I cannot speak highly of how helpful they have been in getting me settled in, and it's been great.
Yeah. What drew you to this position as executive director of the Hancock Historical Museum?
Yeah, so I've been in Findlay a little over 10 years at this point, and for those who already know me, I started my career at the Arts Partnership, and since then they've merged with the Performing Arts Center, of course, but I knew that I would be back in the nonprofit world. I knew that I was meant to be in the room with engaging with our community, and I've been doing that for the last 5.5 years with Findlay Brewing Company.
Right.
But it was just time for that next step, and the stars kind of aligned. It's too perfect, a meaningful job to be able to help preserve and share our community story, and that's the most meaningful thing to me.
You talk about our community. You are not a Findlay native.
Right.
You're actually a native of Lima, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of your adopted community, as with mine. I've been around the community a little bit longer than you have, but what is it that has made it so that it resonated so much for you?
That's a great question, because I came to Findlay in 2010, to attend the University of Findlay.
Yeah.
And I encourage people often, if you have an opportunity to mentor a young professional, do that, because my life looks completely different had I not started to plant roots and build these connections with people in our community from the get-go.
Yeah.
I was very young. I don't know if I was even 21 yet when I started interning here in the community. My first internship was with the Arts Partnership, and I just maintained those connections and always felt so much more connected to this community, even more so than my hometown. And I think it was just the opportunities and the mentorship that got me here.
And the reason I ask that is because now you are in a position to help tell that story of the community, both past and present, for future generations.
Yeah, so. I think that's what makes it feel, for my career, come full circle. I get emotional talking about this. it is something that I will never take for granted, but to be kind of adopted by this community, I can't picture my life any different.
Yeah, and the Historical Museum, the community is glad to have you. The Historical Museum is lucky to have you. You've got things coming up in the month of April. Going to actually be a busy month. The Brown Bag Lunch Lecture is coming up here in a couple of days. Talk about what this is going to be this time around.
Yeah, so we are hitting the ground running. So I've been in my role just a little over 2 months now, and every month it is just nonstop phenomenal to me how much a very small but mighty team, and thanks to our volunteers and supporters, of course, too, but we have something just about every week this month. So yeah, just this Thursday, our Brown Bag Lunch, Fred Steiner is presenting Four Guys Walk Into a Bluffton Bank. And I can't tell you any more than that, because that would give it away.
Some folks know the story, but yes. or know the overarching story, but Fred has done a deep dive in this and knows more than what most people do. So
yes, absolutely. I'm really excited for this one. This is a story that I am not incredibly fluent on. So every opportunity like this, even for me in my role now, I am constantly learning more, and it's very enjoyable. I love
this.
This
will be really fascinating, especially that era. We're talking back to the Prohibition era and, right. you know, so on. So, yeah. So that is Thursday at noon, right?
Yep, yep. Okay. There's no cost. Bring a lunch if you'd like. It's just an hour. There's usually room to ask questions. It's a really, really nice way to just spend a Thursday afternoon.
And then coming up next weekend, is it the Children's Victorian Tea?
Yeah, yeah. Our Children's Victorian Tea this year, it is themed all about lavender. So this is an opportunity. It's really geared for children ages 5 to 12 mm-hmm. with an accompanying adult. So whether it's a parent, grandparent, guardian, just to pair up, dress for the occasion, it's an actual proper tea. So it's one of those ways that it is a fundraiser for the museum, but it's also just a meaningful and fun way to engage our youth in our yeah. history and our community.
Yeah. Do folks, I'm assuming, need to register in advance
yes.
For that? Yes. Are there still openings?
There are openings. Okay. There are limited seats. So this is something that you would definitely want to register for as soon as possible. It is available on our website, but you can also just give us a call.
Okay. And then Earth Day is right around the corner. That's April 20th every year, and you've got a celebration at the museum.
Yes, we're doing that on, like you said, April 20th. It's 5 to 8 p.m., so it's just a fun campus is open. There's activities throughout, a lot of community partners and supporters providing additional activities, and the first 50 kids will go home with a book as well, and that's with our Richard Bargent Fund. It allows us to provide a children's book to families for many of our events.
Very cool. So it's a nice coincidence that it happens on a Saturday. And again, another way of engaging young people in
Absolutely.
The museum.
Absolutely.
More details on all of these happenings are at the website, and we've got that linked up at goodmornings.net. Again, Sarah Foltz is the new executive director at the Hancock Historical Museum. By the way, I want to bring this up because we've been talking about the eclipse, which is less than a week away. You have actually been through this before.
I have, yes.
This is on a totally different subject, but you have actually been through and experienced what we are likely to experience here in about 6 days.
Yes, a few what years
is,
ago.
What is that like? Yeah, you went to what? Kentucky?
I was in Kentucky. Yeah.
Okay, so talk a little bit about that experience.
It is such a cool experience. And I know we talk a lot about having all of our resources, our emergency services prepared. And that is very, very important mm-hmm. from the, let's just say, patron standpoint, or if mm-hmm. you're traveling to experience this.
Yeah.
It is being a once in a lifetime experience.
Or in your case, twice in a lifetime.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. I think I looked, it is the next time this will happen in this area. It's actually falling on my 100th birthday.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah,
maybe it'll
weird,
be three
right?
times in your lifetime if you're
we'll
lucky.
We'll see. I don't know. But ultimately, make sure you have your glasses, play it safe. But also, it's so communal. You're surrounded by people that are experiencing a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun. And when it wraps up, relish in that and don't be in a rush because, A, the traffic is going to be
Yeah,
bad.
There's no point in it. And I was going to ask you about that because you actually, from what I am understanding, mm-hmm. you kind of did this on a whim. It wasn't necessarily a big planned thing where you went and stayed overnight like some people did.
Well, for me, it wasn't planned, but I will say my other half was very planned. So he had a hotel booked a year in advance.
Wow.
To the point where the hotel, we check in and they said, they saw the rate that we got and they said, you booked this a long time
ago, didn't you? Yeah.
So he was very, very prepared and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
And at that time it was in the heat of the summer. So there were a lot of farms, you know, renting out land to be able to park. Mm-hmm. So we had a couple different places reserved to go.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of spring in Hancock County. So yeah,
much different scenario. But
yes.
The traffic, as you mentioned, the traffic getting out, and that's what we've been talking about. Again, you've experienced that. And
yeah, if I could do it all over again, we were those people at the time that tried to leave and head home immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
So if I could do it all over again, we would have made a day, maybe a couple days out of it, and then headed home
mm-hmm.
because the highways were just at an inch speed
yeah.
and you don't know when you're going to see a gas station again or be able to go to the restroom. So mm-hmm. preparing all of those things is going to make the entire experience for everyone much more enjoyable, having those snacks, not being in a rush to leave, and then we'll just see people kind of trickle.
Yeah.
Trickle out.
But definitely worth it.
100%. Yes.
Right. Well, there you go. Again, Sarah Foltz. And I'm wondering real quickly, because as we say, this is a once in a lifetime event. And as it relates to the Hancock Historical Museum, you preserving that for kind of posterity?
Yeah,
kind of
you
looking
have
at
to.
Ways
yeah.
to.
Yeah. that's one thing we have to talk about a lot, because history never ends, right?
Yeah.
Something that happens today, we need to have, you know, resources to be able to preserve that. Now, you think about storage space, you think about bandwidth, and that's something that we have to take very seriously because it's our mission.
So 30 or 40 years ago, or from now, we may see a display in the museum on the eclipse?
I would sure hope so. Yeah. That's the goal.
Again, Sarah Foltz, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about on the program at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, if you want to capture a photo or video of the solar eclipse, a lot of folks will be wanting to do that. We have some tips on getting shots that will do justice to the event itself. And you got to be careful that you don't damage your camera or your smartphone. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.